Good morning. I'm glad to see everyone who has joined us this morning. I am glad to be here. Song leading was great. Galen, thank you so much. Appreciate that, brother. You know, I was thinking about what to preach on, and I began thinking about relationships. And I've got some thoughts that I want to share with you to kind of get things started this morning. Within every relationship, there comes a moment where you have to define that relationship. And those moments can kind of be awkward, maybe even a little bit uncomfortable when you define the relationship that exists between two different people. I remember when the first time that this happened with Lacey and myself, right? We had been dating for a little while, you know, not a super, super long time, but enough to where I had gotten to the point where I'd realized that she meant more to me than, oh, she's so cute, and I feel good about being around her, you know. I realized that I had gotten to the point that I loved her as much as, you know, an 18-year-old guy can realize that, okay? I mean, there are some limitations there, and I know that, right? It was that moment of, okay, let's define the relationship. And so I did that really mature, you know, high school thing that you do. And I told her by writing a note, right? That's the way every woman wants to be talked to about this, right? I wrote her that note, you know, I love you. And, you know, in my naivety, my exuberance, my feelings, I expected this immediate response of, oh, I love you too. But guess what? That did not happen. I had to wait a few days. It got really uncomfortable for me. I'm like, well, gee, what did I misread, you know? You're having all those doubts that go through your mind, and it. I think she was just, you know, in shock. I really do. Like, is this for real? Either that or she was, you know, trying to watch and see how nervous she could make. One of the two. I don't know. But that's the first time that that happened within our relationship. And that got me to thinking about this idea that in every healthy relationship, it reaches a point where this define the relationship kind of talk is needed. This moment where we say, is this relationship a casual relationship or is it committed? Is this one where we've moved past this idea of infatuation and admiration towards that deeper level of devotion and dedication? It reaches that point where we need to eventually sit down and intentionally evaluate where we are and where we want to go in this relationship, and our level of commitment to the other person. And that happens all the time. That also should happen when in our relationship with God. And I don't know about you, but I know that every so often God sends something in my life that makes me do this exact same process. He says, okay, Jonathan, it's time to define the relationship. And something comes along, and I don't know what God has done in your life that way. I know He's done that to me a few different ways. Here recently, He's kind of done it through this idea of how much I've got going on. I've got a lot of things going on in my personal life, and I am trying to juggle and balance the best I can. And I'll be honest with you, there are some times when I don't even feel good about my day. Because I know the things that I should be doing, and then I look at all this list of all these things that I have to get done, and I'm going, I have no time. And I have to start making choices. What's got to be first, and what's got to be next, and what can go, and what's not really that important, what's most important? And there are times I don't like my day. I struggle to get through, not necessarily physically, but emotionally, mentally. I struggle with that. And you know, if I'm being completely honest, sometimes My answer to God's question, to Jesus' question, Jonathan, am I still first? It's not always that easy for me to give that resounding yes, that immediate response. It's not always that easy. Sometimes I have to stop and remind myself of what my priorities should be. What about you? Is Jesus your priority? Is he truly first in your life, or do you struggle to keep him that way? I mean, let's kind of walk through. I want you to think about this with me. Many of us in here may be married, and we have a spouse that needs some time and attention from us. I mean, that's part of that whole coming together part of a relationship, right? We have a spouse, and maybe that's something that takes some of our time and competes with that. Or we may have children. If you have children, you know they take time and lots and lots and lots of time, right? And so, yeah, maybe it's our children. Maybe our children and all the things that they've got going, maybe that's something that compels us and competes with that priority in our life. Maybe it is that we've got grandchildren, right? Can't leave them out. Grandchildren are important, so I've been told. I don't know that yet, okay? But, you know, they need time and they need attention. And sometimes parents need a break, right? And so, yeah, grandkids can be part of this equation. And then you've got friends and family that want you to come here and go to this and be a part of that. And let's go do this together. And, man, where does the time go? And that's just on the people side of things, right? Many of us have jobs. And let's be honest, in today's society, it's not really a job. Everything they want you to do is to become a career, right? And so they're going to take as much time, and they're going to demand as much time as we're willing to let them have. And if you'll give them 50 hours a week, they'll take it. If you'll give them 60, they'll take it. Then there are the things that are fun, right? Can't leave that out, right? I mean, think about it. Were they talking about playing video games or watching football or traveling or camping or whatever it is that you like to do for fun? There's all of those kinds of things that are in there too. And so with all of that considered, is Jesus really first? I know that we all want to say that. I really do. I know that we want to say that Jesus is first, but let me illustrate it maybe in a way that'll make it a little more real for us. Let's imagine that one day you go to your door, there's a knock on your door, you go and you open the door, and there is Jesus at your doorstep. He says, "I'd like to come in." So, of course, you know, you're inviting him in. Yeah, come on in. And you sit down and you begin to have a conversation, and Jesus, you know, being his direct kind of self, says, okay, we're going to cut through all the small talk. He goes, okay, we need to define our relationship. We need to know what this looks like. It's time for you to tell me whether or not I'm first. And he wants to know how we feel about him. He wants to know, is our relationship with him exclusive? Is he really the priority in our life? He wants to know if it's just kind of some casual Sunday morning only kind of a thing. He wants to know how important he is. What's your level of commitment to him? And I don't care if you've called yourself a Christian for many, many years, or you're brand new to the faith. If Jesus was sitting next to you on your couch, sitting across from you in your house, asking you this question, I guarantee you, you would pause and give us some thought before you opened your mouth to answer. Let's define our relationship. And that's what I want us to talk about, because I don't believe that if Jesus were to have that conversation with us, that he would sugarcoat it in any way. I don't believe that he would just kind of play nice and tell us things that make us feel good. I believe he would say, this is what I need from you. This is what I expect in this relationship. And so this morning, I want us to define our relationship with Jesus by asking this question. Am I a fan or a follower? Am I a fan of Jesus are a follower of Jesus? Because I want to suggest to you this morning, there's a big difference. All right? I want us to talk about this a little bit. If you were to have that conversation with Jesus, and you were trying to answer this question with him, am I a fan or a follower? I can't help but think of how challenging that would be in that situation to answer that question. You know, because here's the idea. Jesus doesn't want fans. I don't know if you've ever thought about that. Jesus didn't come to the earth to be the superhero of the earth and have all these people venerate him and worship him and lift him up as the mighty. No, he came as a servant. He came to seek and to save the lost, to give his life as a ransom for many. He didn't come set up as the global king, right? Jesus hasn't ever really wanted fans. I want you to see his call from the beginning. Jesus, whenever he's called people to follow him, he's always called them. And when he does, he says, you need to count the cost. If you have your Bibles, open them up to Luke chapter 14 this morning. Luke chapter 14, we're going to be looking at verses 25 through 33 as our text this morning. In Luke chapter 14, I'm going to begin in verse 25. The text reads this way. It says, now great crowds accompanied him. And he turned and he said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother, wife and children and brothers and sisters, and yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come to after me cannot be my disciple. I want you to just pause for a moment and think about what's going on here. There, Jesus at this point in time has large crowds of people that are following him. They're fans of Jesus. But Jesus says, look, I don't want fans. Matter of fact, he turns to all these fans and he says, look, am I first or not? There can't be anybody else above me. Not your father, not your mother, not your wife, not your sisters, not your brothers. Nobody. Am I first? Because if I'm not, you can't be my disciple. Do you put me even above yourself? Do you do that? Because if you don't, if you're not willing to, then you cannot be my disciple. Jesus, I mean, it kind of boggles the mind in our social media oriented kind of world where everybody wants followers and wants to be the most popular and well-liked. Jesus has all that going on in this text, and he says, that's not what I'm after. I'm not after a bunch of people to follow me around half-heartedly and cheer on the things that they like. That's not what I'm after. I'm after followers. I'm after people who want to put me first in their relationship, right? Jesus wants to be the priority, not a priority, the priority. And that's something that we need to think about. As he goes on in this text, he gives some examples to tell kind of what he's talking about. And beginning in verse 28, he says, for which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going out to encounter another king in war, will not sit down and first deliberate whether he's able with 10,000 to meet him who comes with 20,000? And if not, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends for the delegation and asks for terms of peace. Jesus says, look, count the cost. This is not something I want you to do. He says, look, here's my demand. I need to be the priority. And to understand what that means, you need to count the cost. You need to weigh whether or not you have what it takes to finish this, whether this is what you're going to be willing to do or not. And you know, when we look at the world at large, I'll be honest, lots of people portray this idea that Jesus has many, many, many followers out there. But let me tell you something. I think if we were actually to sit down and look at their lives and the way that they live, there's another word that would define their relationship with Jesus, and it is not follower. I believe that word is fan. They are a fan of Jesus, right? When you look in the dictionary, here's the most basic definition of the word fan: an enthusiastic admirer. I believe there's a lot of people out in the world today that are enthusiastic admirers of Jesus, right? I mean, we know who these people are and other things, right? I mean, it's the guy at the football game that comes there with no shirt on, even though it's freezing cold and he's all painted colors. It's this kind of a guy, right? We know what fans are, right? But what do fans do? They sit in the stands and they cheer and they yell, right? They scream for their team. They support their players. They can tell you all the statistics about all the guys that are on their team, but they don't know any of them. They want to get up there and they want to tell everybody how to play, but they don't want to get up and be the ones on the field taking the hits. They want to be the ones that are inspired and encouraged by what somebody else has done when they're not willing to try to do it themselves. I think when we get right down to it, Jesus has a lot of fans these days. Fans who cheer him on when things are going well in their life and they're feeling blessed, but who struggle to walk with him when it gets hard. Fans who sit safely in the pews cheering for what Jesus has done for them, but not knowing the sacrifice that comes from serving like him. Fans who know about him, but don't really know him. I think when you really get down to it, in the world today, Jesus has a lot more fans than he does followers. And here's the thing. Jesus never intended to have fans. I don't know if you've ever caught that. Jesus, when he defines what he wants in a relationship, this idea of enthusiastic admirer, there's not room for that. That's not an option, right? I mean, I want you to think about how he concludes this passage, right? Luke chapter 14, verse 33. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. You want to talk about something that's unpopular? You want to talk about a teaching that makes people walk away from you? That's one of them. If you don't renounce all that you have, you cannot be my disciple. And you know, here's something that I want you to think about. As I thought about this idea, I think a lot of what people call churches today are not doing what God wants them to do. Instead of them having sanctuaries, we become stadiums, where we gather together and we want to cheer on Jesus and, hey, yay, Jesus, and I'm so glad for you, Jesus. I'm so thankful. But I'm going to walk out of here and I'm just going to go back to my life the way it was. Thank you very much. I did my part. I came. I cheered for you. I told everybody how glad I was to be there, you know. People, there's many people today that are interested to get close enough to Jesus to get the benefits, but they don't want to be so close enough that they have to sacrifice. And that's a problem. That's a problem. And I believe, personally, that one of the biggest threats to Christianity today is fans who call themselves Christians, but they aren't actually interested in following Christ because they're not willing to pay the price. So let's ask the question, are you a fan or a follower? Which one is it? Am I a fan or a follower? You know the problem with this question, right? This, as I thought about this, the problem with answering this question for yourself is what? It is almost impossible to be objective. Have you ever thought about that? I mean, have you ever noticed that? All of us here today, I believe, want to say, I'm a follower, right? I believe that. I really do. But here's the thing. How do we define that? How do we define that? Most of the time, if we were asked to define how you know you're a follower, we would use standards that are very subjective. I don't know if you've ever thought about it that way, right? Okay. Many people, many fans, mistakenly identify themselves as followers by cultural comparison. What do I mean by that? Well, they look around at the people they know, and they go, hey, they claim to be a follower, and look, they do this and this, and I don't do any of that stuff, and I do this, and they don't. And it becomes a game of comparison. I know I'm a follower because I'm better than him or her or them. Our family's better than that family. And so that must mean I'm a follower. Because they're a follower, they say, and I'm doing better than they are. And so some people define and try to answer this question of whether they're a fan or a follower by looking at other people and comparing themselves against other people. And if you don't believe me, okay, I want you to think about this. Have you ever seen a situation in a church where something happens with a family? Either there's a child that rebels and falls away from the Lord, or there's some kind of marital upset, and everybody kind of goes, oh, they're not as perfect as they seem. You ever seen that situation? Maybe you're the one that said, they're not as perfect as they seem. Are you a fan or a follower? How are you defining that? You see, the simple truth is, whenever we do that, whenever we define our following, whether we try to answer this question with comparison, you know what we always do by default? We always compare ourselves to those who are more spiritually anemic than us. Those who are weaker spiritually in the faith. We always look at them and go, whoo, I feel good. We don't take those people that have been serving faithfully for years and that are very spiritually mature. We don't look at them and go, oh, we don't want to do that. Because then we realize how short we fall. Comparison doesn't answer this question, right? Another way that people tend to answer this question is they kind of pull out their religious ruler and have all these little tick marks on there. They have their, another way you might think of this is their little checkbox list. Right? Well, I went to services. Check. I even did some extra Bible reading. That's going to be a draw in a box down here. Check. I gave a contribution. Hey, I even taught Bible class. That's another extra box down here. We'll go check. Right? And we have all this list of stuff that we think is going to somehow define us as a follower of Jesus. Let me tell you something. You can check all the boxes you want to check and still find yourself in a place you don't want to be in your relationship with Jesus. Right? I mean, think about it this way. The Pharisees back in Jesus' day were great box checkers. Man, they had a list a mile and a half long of boxes that you had to check to be considered a good person and a godly person. And they would do their best to check as many boxes on that list as they could. But Jesus looked at them and said, you're not getting it. It's not about checking boxes. It's about giving your life to God. I mean, I want you to think about it this way. There's so many things that people use to define and try to answer this question, whether or not they're followers or fans. But here's the real question. How does Jesus define what it means to follow him? What did he say? I mean, we just read the verses. If you're not willing to give up everything, then you cannot be my disciple. When we look at that call, when we look at that as the definition, guess what? Our comparisons fall short. Our checkbox list won't make it. It becomes about our heart before God. And let me tell you, there's lots of people that are happy to follow Jesus this day, as long as it doesn't mean any significant changes or negative things in their life, right? And here's the problem with that. That's not following Jesus. It costs to follow Jesus. Matter of fact, Jesus says it's going to cost you everything to follow me. And so that brought up this challenging question that I want to ask you. Has following Jesus cost you anything? And I don't mean that to be a rhetorical question. You got a bulletin? You got a spot in there for sermon notes. If you haven't written anything down, great. Here's your chance. I want you to make a list of what following Jesus has cost you. What have you given up? What has been taken away from you because of your faith? Not because you chose something. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about him. Write it down. See what you can come up with. Because here's the truth. Most of us aren't going to have a list that's all that long. We're defining and trying to answer this question of whether we're a fan or a follower by the wrong standard. Jesus said, you got to give it all up. Why won't we have a long list? Well, I mean, the simple truth is this. Most of us don't mind the Jesus thing, if you let me use that term, okay? As long as it's only affecting us in our lives in minor ways. But Jesus doesn't want that. Jesus wants to turn our life completely upside down. I don't know if you've ever thought about it this way, but you know, if you're a fan, you don't mind a little bit of touch-up work. But guess what? Jesus wants to do a renovation, right? Fans are those that come to Jesus thinking tune-up. But Jesus takes a look under the hood and goes, nope, this is an overhaul. There's all kinds of bad stuff in here. It's got to go, right? Fans come thinking, you know, just a little makeup is fine. But Jesus said, no, that's a makeover, right? I mean, I want you to think about this. Fans think that the little decorating is required, but Jesus says, no, that's a complete remodel right there. You can't touch that up. Let's start over. Let's tear it all out. Let's build it back up. Right? Fans want Jesus to inspire them, to encourage and lift them up. But Jesus wants to interfere with our lives. He wants to say, all your priorities are wrong. Let me fix them. Let me show you what it's supposed to be, so you can be pleasing to God. And so here's the question that I want us to think about. Have we made a decision for Jesus, or have we committed to Jesus? There's a difference in today's society. There shouldn't be, really, biblically, but there is. I want you to think about this thought process. Many today have made a decision to believe in Jesus, right, without making the commitment to follow Jesus. They said, yes, I believe in him. But here's the problem. The gospel doesn't allow for that distinction. The gospel says, die to self, be buried with Christ, rise to walk in the newness of life, not what you want to live, but that represents Christ. There's none of this, I'm going to believe in Jesus but not follow him business in the Bible. It's just not there. Okay? Biblical belief, brethren, is more than some mental assent. It's more than some heartfelt acknowledgement. Oh, that was such a moving lesson. No. No. Biblical belief says, I am convicted in such a way that I'm going to act on this and I'm going to change who I am so that I look more like Christ. That's what biblical belief is. Don't believe me? Go look at the book of Hebrews. By faith, so-and-so did something over and over and over. They were convicted to the point that they changed. They acted in some way. That's what biblical belief is, right? And I'm afraid sometimes we have, as in the church, done a disservice to people because we've taught this idea of belief, but we haven't taught the idea of follow. I mean, I want you to be thinking about this, right? Okay? Sometime do a favor for me, okay? Read through the Gospels and see how many times Jesus says, believe in me. Okay, when you do this, you'll come up about five, maybe depending on your translation, maybe a few more or less. Whatever. Then go through and read those same Gospels and look for how many times he says, follow me. You're going to get in the ballpark of about 20. Now, I'm not trying to say that following is more important than believe. I believe that they are all one concept, okay? So, but here's the idea. We can't say we believe if we're not willing to follow. Those two things are connected. And if we want to say we believe, then we better be following. And if we're not willing to follow, then, brethren, we need to change our vocabulary because we really don't believe. And that's the way the Bible works it. And sometimes I think our churches kind of, in our teaching, we kind of emphasize one more than the other. And it creates this dichotomy that shouldn't be there. And I'll be honest, I really feel like our churches are going to be full of fans until we stop doing that. Until people understand that to believe in Jesus is to follow Jesus. And it's not just about the words we say, but it's about the lives that we live. So I'm going to ask you this morning, are we committed to Christ? I want you to think about that. Are we committed to Christ? Remember, commitment is more than words, right? It's actions. Okay? So are we committed? Last week, the elders essentially asked this congregation, are you committed to being members here? That's not what they said. That's not the way they phrased it. That's the way I'm phrasing it. Right? Just put that out there. But that's what they're asking. Are you committed to being a part of this body? Are you committed to the work that we want to do? Are you committed to following Christ here in Enid, Oklahoma? So my question is, are you? Are you committed? And if so, you say yes. How does it show? Remember, commitment is more than words. It's actions. What are the actions in your life that demonstrate your commitment? I love the point that Brother Ray made in his sermon last week. He was talking about the idea of some people want to have Christ but not have the church. He said, that's not possible. If you have Christ, you're part of the church, and those things work together. You can't have one and not the other. Right? And so that's what I want you to think about. You can't be committed to Christ and not committed to his church. So let's ask some questions. Some serious questions. Let's ask this. Does our family see our commitment at home? When we leave here, when all the eyes are off of us, what is our conversation like? Right? The way I heard this when I was a young man was, do we go home and have roasted elder and fricassee preacher for lunch? What do our kids hear? What does our spouse hear from us? Are we committed at home? Do our brethren see our commitment by the way that we love them and work with them and try to comfort them and go to them? Do they see that? At work, do your coworkers see your commitment? Or is there something else that comes first? Do your friends see your commitment when you're with them? Right? What about all of those people out there that are lost and don't know the Lord? If they looked at your life, would they see commitment? Or would they see somebody that kind of casually follows? Would they see a fan or a follower? Right? Most of the people that I would probably classify as a fan have been in a situation, in a belief system where this idea of belief is talked about a lot, and the idea of following is not so much. I was visiting with somebody that I'm working with, and man, I'll tell you what, they can talk up a storm about how they believe in Jesus and this and that and this and that, and then turn around and get on the phone with somebody they know, and I swear it's like, where's my language filter? Like, what just happened here? I mean, I'm just being honest. And I really do believe that's what has happened to them is that the idea of believing in Jesus has been put in such just all capital letters, right? Everything about, oh, this is the big thing. But the idea of following Jesus is all in small print. Like sometimes that little bitty print that you got to read, the fine print, you know, that you got to have the magnifying glass to read. And let me tell you something. That's not okay. That's not true discipleship. They both need to be in capital letters. Because they go together. And so that's my challenge for us. I want to challenge us to reverse this. I want to challenge us to be those kinds of people who truly show what it is to follow Jesus. Not that speak to speak, but that we do that and we live the life so that our life gives credibility to our speech. That's what I want to see us do. And I don't want you to think about that. I want you to think about the difference that it would make if people really saw us being that kind of a person. Where follow was just as important as believe. Where we were those who follow Jesus with all of our hearts. What would that mean? What would that look like? I want you to think about that. I think it would mean a couple different things. First of all, I think it would mean that we are people who truly trust God's plans and purposes for our life. Right? And that's a great thing to say, but man, that's a hard thing to live. What do I mean by that? Well, let's say it this way. Lord, if your plan for me is to deal with this sickness and this disability like it was with Jacob, then okay. Lord, if your plan is for me to lose my wealth and my health like Job did, if that's your will for me, okay. Lord, if your plans means being persecuted or maybe even martyred like the prophets, okay. Your will be done. You see, it's really easy. It's really easy for us to trust God's will when He chooses to bless us. Right? We like following His will then. It's a lot harder when He's making us like His Son through trials and persecution. When we have to sacrifice and give things up. I think it would also mean that we're not to be only dependent on God, but dependent upon His body. I mean, if we're truly following Christ, if we truly believe that we are a part of the church, guess what? We're not going to try to do it all on our own. We're going to come to each other. We're going to help each other do what God needs done. We're going to depend on the body of Christ. Right? This is where a lot of Christ's helps and resources come from. Each other, the love that we have. I think it would also mean that Christ would be exalted in everything that we do. Everything. I'm talking like the day-to-day, mundane kind of stuff. Like when we go out to eat or when we go home and eat, people can tell that we're a follower of Christ. Okay? When we're taking and we're going to the workplace, people can tell that we're followers of Christ because we're not those that are taking all this shortcuts and cutting the corners. When it's our leisure activities and the things we like to do, where we like to spend our free time, people can look at that and go, yes, they are a follower of Christ. That's what we're talking about here. All those things should be done in such a way that Christ is glorified if we want to call ourselves His follower. And so I want you to think about that. What kind of difference would it make if we live that way? If each and every one of us purposefully, intentionally said that's the way we're going to live, what kind of difference would it make? Let me suggest to you it could make a great difference. Okay? Matter of fact, in Acts chapter 17, we have an example of this. Verse 6, it says, "And when they could not find him, they dragged Jason and some of the brothers before the city authorities, shouting, 'These men who have turned the world upside down have come here also.'" Listen, if we live lives that truly say we are a follower of Jesus, we're going to turn Enid, Oklahoma upside down. That's what happened when they did it in the New Testament. That's what people accused. That was their accusation. These men have turned the world upside down. Let me ask us this question. Who would make that accusation against us? Who would say, oh, that church at Garrett Road, they're the people that turned the world upside down. They've turned this town on its head. If they're not going to say that about us, then what are we going to do about it? Because the answer of sitting does not sit well. Let's be these kinds of people. Let's be a church that says we're going to turn the world upside down. We don't even got to start with the world, y'all. Start with your neighborhood. Turn your neighborhood upside down. Turn this city upside down. Right? That's where we need to start. Are we going to be those kinds of people? Let's do that together. Let's be the church that turns Enid on its head. Now, I want to make one last thing clear this morning. Okay. Many people have bought into this gospel that's promoted out there where that promises everything and costs nothing. Right? Well, let me tell you something. In case somebody else has forgotten to tell you this, go back and read the words of Jesus. Because being a Christian is not like that. Okay? Let me be clear. There is no forgiveness without repentance. Right? There is no salvation without true surrender. Right? There is no eternal life without death to yourself. That's what Christianity is. That's what it means to follow Jesus Christ. Because there is no believing without committing. So today, are you willing to commit your life to Christ? And I don't mean in words only. Are you willing to live the life that says, I'm all in for you, Jesus. I want to be your disciple. I'll give it all up. If so, we want to help you do that. And if you're here this morning and you realize that you should be living this way and you haven't been, I want to challenge you to make those changes. If we can help you, if we can make those changes, if we can help you know Christ, please come as we stand, as we sing.